You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 221. Back on the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and I'm here with not one, but two Adams, two of my very favorite Adams of Punk News. First of all, we are here with Managing Editor Adam White, way up north, way up north. Adam White, how's it going way up north where it's starting to get pretty chilly these days?
It is not nearly as cold in my area of the north as it probably is in most of it, so I can't really complain.
Don't you really live basically in, like, Brooklyn or something, essentially?
It's the part of Southern Ontario that I live in, which is, like, the bottom of it, just juts down into the U.S. So if you were to draw a straight line, like, take the, I guess, like, would it be the longitude?
Latitude. Latitude is like a ladder. Longitude goes long ways up and down the globe. Thanks, Mrs. Young, my fourth grade
okay,
teacher.
Anyways, yes. So if you were to take the latitude of where I am, it's far below a whole bunch of U.S. cities that are no one would ever consider to be, at least no one in Canada thinks about as being, like, north of most of Canada. But, yeah, I am. So, plus, I feel like I've talked about this on the show like once a year or so when winter comes up. I live in Niagara, which is, I don't know, it's on the other side of Buffalo, sort of, for people from the States who know where that is. When the winter comes, Buffalo gets slammed because all this lake effect snow blows off of Lake Erie and just fucks Buffalo right over. We have the opposite effect on this side. We're in a microclimate, so we're surrounded by two lakes and a river, and it moderates how cold it gets here. And we have grapes growing here, and it's great. So, yeah, it gets cold, and we have snow and stuff like that. But compared to, like, the rest of Canada, this is pretty mild.
So what you're saying is right now you're sitting outside at a tiki bar with one of those coconut drinks, like in your swim trunks, maybe a big floppy hat and sunglasses?
I'm sitting in my basement in pajamas drinking an old-fashioned, but, yeah, same thing.
And speaking of a guy that just got back from where it's hotter, where it's fiercer, where it's warmer, where it's muggier, where it's scratchier, where it's smellier, we've got news editor, the guy who looks over every single word that gets posted to Punk News, Adam Eisenberg, who just got back from Fest. Adam Eisenberg, who'd you see down Fest? What bands? Did you go to any house shows? What was it like? Was it a great fest? Was it a mediocre fest? Was it a bad fest? Was it the best fest ever? How was your fest? And are you infested in Fest now?
I would say it was a pretty good fest. I mean, I saw the Descendants. That was obviously a pretty big deal.
Was the Descendants, like Descendants good? Like, was it a mind-blowing show, or was it just a pretty good show?
They were pretty excellent. They played at, so I don't know if you guys have been down there before. The shows are for the most part in clubs, like the regular club type shows. They're not like huge, you know, outdoor venue festival shows. But this year they had one outdoor venue that was a little more like park amphitheater style. So they played there, and that was, I don't know, sound was kind of iffy there all weekend. But
I saw a photo of that on I think the AV Club or something did a fest write up, which was really weird because it was written from this, like, hey, wider audience of the internet, you've never heard of Fest, let's talk about it, which is not the way that we usually talk about it, and it was odd to see it. But I saw that picture of the amphitheater, and I was just like, ooh, that's not my fest. I don't recognize that. That's different.
Yeah, it was a little different in the sense that the old large venue was like a big ass club, and it, I don't know whether it closed down or their relationship ended or what, but that place is not in use anymore. So they worked with the city and they got a permit to use this outdoor thing. It's right in the middle of downtown Gainesville. It's like a nice park amphitheater thing. They did a decent job, you know, setting it up for a punk show, but it's still an outdoor amphitheater thing.
Hmm. I can't remember what the name of the big indoor theater was, but
it was just called The Venue.
Yeah. I think it was one of those places that had a few names. I wasn't a huge fan of that place. And I remember the one year I was down there, you know, that's of course where like a lot of the big bands were. And I was in and out of there every once in a while to see one of the big bands, but I stuck to most of the small stuff outside of it. And that's not me trying to be like, yeah, I'm, you know, that's not me trying to posture and say that I you know, yeah, I'm at Fest, but I'm so, you know, I'm so punk, I don't see the big shows. It's not that. It's just that I just had a much better time in the smaller ones.
The smaller venues are more like seeing a band in like the typical venue you'd see them. Seeing them in that bigger place, you know, maybe if it was a nicer, better run, bigger place. But, you know, they always, like most of those venues, you have Fest volunteers who are like doing security by the stage and they know how to take care of people. At that place, they had like the bouncers who work at the place who normally handle a very different kind of crowd. And, you know, there was like tension in that venue that you didn't have at the other ones.
Do you guys think bouncers are getting a little bit more aggressive than they were like 2 or 3 years ago? I was at a Leftover Crack show and like I was standing by myself and I got pushed a little bit just by the mosh pit, not a big deal. So I took like 3 steps back. Well, I mean, like I was moved 3 steps back. You know what I'm saying? So I tapped with my back this bouncer. The bouncer grabs my shirt, hurls me into the pit. Like he was a big dude. And so, like, you know, so I stumble forward a little bit, turn back around, look at the guy, like, and then he, like, puts up his fist like he wants to brawl with me.
I think it depends on the venue. Because, I mean, at Fest this year, I think every venue was, the security was primarily just Fest volunteers. And it was, you know, it was wonderful.
How are those guys good at security? I mean, like, I mean, a bouncer really has to be a big person, you know, big guy. If they're volunteers, how can they like be security? Or do people just behave themselves?
People behave themselves.
Well, that's good to hear. What was the 2C show? And you don't have to say this one, but what was the most disappointing show? But what was the 2C show at Fest?
There's so many for different people. I mean, I saw Lifetime at that outdoor venue and there were a shit ton of people there. That seemed like for a lot of people, you know, outside of the Descendants, obviously. Lifetime seemed to be a really big one for people.
Did you go see Melvins?
I did not, actually.
What?
I did not.
Weak.
But they are actually here in Fort Lauderdale tomorrow, and I might go check them out.
You should probably go, Adam E. Along those lines, Adam E., I'm glad you had a good time at Fest. Would you recommend it for the non-Fest attendee who has never been to Fest? Should people go to Fest next year?
Well, funny story, Punk News' own Mark Little had never been to Fest and went this year.
Do you think Mark had a good time? Did he enjoy himself?
He certainly seemed to be enjoying himself.
Did you guys bro down?
We broed down, yes.
What bands did you guys bond over, aside from the Melvins?
Well, we saw right at the beginning of Fest at like 3 in the afternoon on Friday, like maybe the first official set of Fest was Kepi Ghouli acoustic.
Oh, how was that? How was Kepi?
We went to that. Well, he played acoustic on Friday, and he's always good. And then on Saturday night, he like closed out one of the bigger venues, played like after midnight with Chicks Dig It backing him, like an all Groovy Ghouli set.
How was that? Was that awesome? Kepi's
Yeah, that was awesome. There were balloons. It was chaos.
Well, fantastic. We got an action-packed episode on tonight. We're going to be doing a lot of heavy philosophical debate, a lot of unusual tracks on tonight's Punk News Podcast. We're going to be talking about Refused. Did John Branson quit? Well, he did quit, but does that mean the band is still around? We're going to be talking about the Vandals going ska. Well, they've been ska, but the Vandals talking about their love of ska. We're going to be talking about Gian Gomeshi, doing some pretty nasty things and punk rockers going on the attack. We're going to be talking about Painted Black canceling a show and then doing a surprise show under a bridge. We're going to be talking about Brazzi Music breaking up, which totally bums me out. We're going to be talking about Public Enemy reissuing their 2 classic albums, which totally got me psyched. We're going to be talking about the Downtown Boys, who are a great band, signing to Don Giovanni. We're going to be talking about the guy that just got released from jail and charges were dropped for posting Exodus lyrics. And if we have time, we're going to talk about Antartico Vespucci. So let's get this party started. Over last weekend, there's some unusual activity on the Refuse Facebook page. Basically, out of the blue, on the page, John Brandstrom, who I believe is the guitarist of Refused, said, "I was fired from Refused a while ago. I wasn't given a reasonable explanation and wasn't even invited to sit down and talk about it. So I'm not completely sure why they decided to go on without me." And then he goes on for a while. You can read the whole thing at Punk News. But he says, "Even rationalization and moaning, though, I'm writing to you through this form to express my gratitude." And then basically says, "Thanks for letting me be part of Refused." And then he says, "From the bottom of my heart, thank you. See you in the pit. Love, John Brandstrom." Then about a couple hours later, the band did the same post on the same Facebook page. "Any collective effort will have its ups and downs. When people pour their hearts into something, things get complicated. We cut ties with John already in 2013 because he did not share our passion for the band. We don't know why he decided to emit this narrative on Facebook or why he did it now instead of just calling one of us up, but we wish him the best in his future endeavors / Refused." Well, that was kind of a passive-aggressive little last line there, Refused, but the point is this, is after Refused 2012 reunion, I think everyone pretty much assumed that was the end of Refused. Do you guys think Refused is recording new material? Will there be new material? Is this even worth talking about? Is Refused past its prime, past its moment of interest? Or is Refused still the legendary band that people have always said it was since they put out The Shape of Punk to Come? And of course, there's the old joke, if The Shape of Punk to Come was accurate, it would have been a guy playing an acoustic guitar and singing about whiskey.
That's an old joke?
Yeah, I mean, that's
true. Is that like a John Gentile specific
joke? No, I actually ripped that joke off a poster that put that on the Punk News website like a year or two ago, and I thought it was hilarious. So, a poster who came up with that joke, I love that joke, but I don't know who you are. I would give you credit.
Huh. Anyway, yeah. I didn't realize that Refused was doing anything. I knew they had reunited and had played their shows and whatever they were doing. I didn't realize that they were an ongoing concern. So this doesn't, this has no emotional impact on me. I guess I'm a fan of The Shape of Punk to Come, like I guess everyone, but you know, it doesn't feel like we've lost a great opportunity that if Refuse is falling apart at this point, because they were already dead. So that was all. See, look what I did. That wasn't what I was trying to do.
And that's the end of podcast. Best joke of the night.
Mic drop.
See you guys next week.
Yeah. Okay. Not making clever quips. I didn't realize that Refused was still considered to be a band that was functioning. So, you know, if you were a diehard, I'm sure you would have gotten out to see them at one of the reunion shows that they did recently. And so I don't know. I don't know who feels bad about this, you know.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, I didn't know they were doing anything. I knew they reunited. I actually saw one of those shows, and they were good. But, yeah, after that, it was like, all right, we played our shows back to hibernation, but apparently something was going on.
If Refuse comes back, will people be like, yes, Refuse is finally back, it's going to be great again? Or will it be like a big deal and then everyone will just forget about it all of a sudden, like Death from Above 1979?
I feel that we're kind of burned out on bands reuniting.
Yeah,
like,
you think?
Like, I don't know who I'm supposed to get excited about.
You know who I'm getting excited about?
Honestly, like, I was more excited about Refuse reuniting because I thought to myself, this punk news story will get people talking. That was, and I like Refused. It was just, it's just one of those, we've been through, you know, everyone short of, I guess, Operation Ivy has gotten back together. So what more do we need at this point? Like this is, we're in this like Ouroboros thing. Like the snake has completely eaten itself at this point. There is no one else left to reunite with any kind of impact.
Nice use of Ouroboros there, Adam. I appreciate that. People were saying they were really surprised that John Brandstrom was fired from the band because apparently the band made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Moving on, the Vandals have released a new song. The song is called It's Got to Be Ska. It's from a Reggie Watts special. And apparently the singer is not one of the Vandals. It's a comedian, Matt Besser, who I don't know who he is. But, man, I'll tell you, I'm really just dwelling on this too much. But I just thought this was a hilarious, hilarious track. It's like the Vandals doing like a specials-type song. And the whole song is just about why the only thing you should do is ska. And, like, one of the lyrics is, like, I want to call my senator and have him outlaw everything but ska. And I thought this was hilarious. And I love this. And I thought it was delightful. I thought this was great.
I did not. I just didn't see why it was necessary.
The problem is that, like, joke ska and the ska that everyone was taking serious, like, 6 or 7 years ago, is all sort of the same. So, I don't know.
Even Adam White's coming down hard on it. Adam White, the ska maniac from 97.
You know when my excitement was at its highest for this? Was when I saw the headline, and then I discovered it, like, wasn't really the Vandals, and I was like, shit.
Well, what do you mean it's not really the Vandals? You mean, like, the singer's not the Vandals?
It doesn't really sound like the Vandals.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
So, I don't know. Excited for nothing. That didn't help my reaction to it after I heard it.
No, this was made for a TV show, correct?
A skit on IFC.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I just said 7 years ago in reference to ska, but that would be like 2007, and that's completely wrong. I'm really old now. 14 years ago? Fuck. You know, when ska was happening, and it was okay.
Well, I thought this was funny. You guys are both wrong. Let's talk about something that really is wrong. This is serious business. As a lot of you probably know, CBC, that's Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, Gian Gomeshi was fired from the radio network. The reason he was fired from the radio network is the network received reports that he exhibited violent behavior and unwanted sexual advances and actions towards multiple women. After that happened, after he was fired, Gian Gomeshi went on his Facebook and basically he said, I've been fired wrongly. Every sexual thing I've done is a light form of 50 Shades of Grey. Everything I've done is consensual. I'm going to sue the CBC, and I've hired a PR firm. So after that, he hired a PR firm who, what they do is they're – I didn't even know this existed. They're a crisis management PR firm. So, like, when Mel Gibson said all those nasty things about Jewish – it was Jewish people, right? When he said all those nasty things about Jewish people, he hired not necessarily this firm, but a firm. What they do is they try to save your image after you do something really, 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 really stupid. So after Gian Gomeshi hired this PR firm, a bunch of people, and including some bands, got together and signed a petition supporting the victims of Gomeshi's alleged victims. And people say, well, why are they alleged victims? The reason they're alleged victims is because we're protecting ourselves mostly. That is, until a court decides something, we can't say if somebody did something nasty or not. Generally speaking, people that have signed this are effed up. The Constantines, Owen Pallett, Jennifer Castle, Katie Stelmatis, and a whole lot of other people. And basically, they essentially said, we condemn the PR attempt to make you out to be a jilted ex. And this is speaking to the victims. The alleged victims. We condemn the PR attempt to make you out to be a jilted ex. And we see through this deplorable strategy of rerouting a conversation that should be about consent and assault to one about BDSM. That's, what's that stand for? Sadomasochism. Or what's the first two? Like dominance or something?
Bondage,
dominant sadomasochism. Yeah. No one should be abused anywhere, not on a date, not in a workplace. No one should be intimidated out of coming forward with their own stories. A couple of interesting caveats to that. One of them is that one of the actresses who played Lucy, her name is Lucy – oh, no, the actress's name is Lucy Delicator.
But she played Lucy as well.
She was one of the victims, and apparently he also is alleged to have harassed a couple of people working at the radio station. Oh, and another I guess I'm not worried about digging up dirt on this guy, but apparently he did this really creepy thing, and this is all alleged, where he had a stuffed rabbit or a stuffed bear, and before he would like do these nasty things with women, he would like turn it around and say like Mr. Flopsy doesn't need to see this or something like that. Pretty creepy stuff. I'll let you guys – oh, and then after that, he was dropped by his PR firm because the PR firm said he told them lots of untruths. So right now he's got a lot of issues on his hands. I have an opinion on this, but I'll let you guys go first.
Well, I mean, I can take this from the Canada angle. Where do you want me to start? Oh, I guess the first question would really be, for you as an American, were you even aware this guy existed before this broke?
No, and that's actually my question. Is he as big as – it seemed like he's gigantic. Is he as big as Howard Stern?
That's not the right – the right analogy.
Really?
A better analogy would be John Peel.
So he's famous.
Well, not. I mean, not in terms of how big he is, but in terms of his importance as a person within the Canadian arts scene. Mm. So this is of course like really big news in Canada, really really big news if you're into any of the arts in Canada. And I know that that Gomeshi's show on CBC Radio, which is called Q, it is run on a bunch of NPR or PRI stations or something like that in the U.S. So there's some traction down there. One of the few CBC shows that actually has that kind of international distribution and following on it, mainly because of the quality of the show over the years. So Gomeshi had really been positioned as he was one of these kind of consummate tastemaker people within the Canadian the Canadian art scene. If you were a band of any note that had a record coming out, you would go on to Q, play a couple songs, do an interview. If you were a major media figure of any sort, if you were a famous author, you would get on there. You'd be a famous Canadian authors, people like Margaret Atwood or something would have been on Q, you know.
Is she Canadian? Yeah,
she is.
Oh, I know that.
So Atwood would have been on Q, you know, like any number of times as she had things to promote coming out. Because that's generally where you would go if you wanted to connect with a listenership that kind of fell into that, you know, likely a little bit more affluent, intellectual, you know, arts conscious, urban demographic. That's who Q would speak to. And likewise, if there was a let's say a U.S. celebrity that was up in Canada promoting a film, inevitably they would end up on Q doing the interview there. Only because if you're going to come and speak to anyone in the Canadian media to promote some artistic endeavor, you would go talk to Gian Gomeshi on Q. I guess I can't say still is, because who knows what's going to happen with that show now. It was a really big deal. And it was a really big deal largely based on Gomeshi's public persona. He was one of these guys that was I read a really great description of him the other day that seemed to capture this very well, is that he was on the one hand the poster child for the liberal view of a modern Canadian. So he was a son of Iranian immigrants. So he was one of these people that, you know, he wasn't one of these like old white broadcasters. He was part of this new multicultural, you know, mix that this melting pot, I guess, if you want to use an American term for it, that represents, you know, urban Canadian society now. So he was one of these people, but at the same time, he wasn't a scary leftist in the way. So he could still connect with and still get respect from a lot of the, you know, older establishment kind of people, because when you would hear any of his interviews or anything like that, they're always very measured and very thoughtful. And he had a really good radio voice. And well, I suppose he still does. But yeah, he had a very good radio voice, a very good presence. He could kind of delve into questions and get into the heads really of the people that he was interviewing. He was very good at it. So while Q is a show on CBC, our publicly funded national broadcaster up here, it was very much championed by Gian and made into the, I don't know, the behemoth that it is by Gian. So that's just a little bit of a background as of why about what his importance is there. Now, I can guarantee you, if you would have gone on to one of the really right wing papers up here, papers like, say, like the Toronto Sun, and you looked at their comment section when the allegations and, well, really when Gomeshi's firing happened and this all jumped into the news, you would have seen lots of comments on there from Canadians that were like, who the hell is this guy? But that's, again, that's speaking to like the demographic that he spoke to. So, you know, if you're in the arts, you knew who he was. So he was important from that perspective. And as far as the CBC goes, this is our national broadcast. The CBC is a little bit of an embattled thing in Canada. We have a conservative government right now. They have never been fans of the fact that we have a public broadcaster. They like to use it as an example of something that we should be cutting. And, you know, one of those things that we don't need to spend money on. If we're shooting for smaller government, why are we paying for a broadcaster? Now, I don't want to get too much into the counter-argument to that. The counter-argument to that is that by, you know, per capita, Canadians spend way less on public broadcasting than really anyone else in the world that has a public broadcaster. You know, Britons pay way more per person for the BBC than the measly amount that we pay for the CBC to exist. But anyways, I don't want to go there. It's a totally different argument than what we're talking about. But the CBC has been very embattled. They've had a little bit of a credibility problem because they've had their funding cut. They've been under the microscope. The government's been trying to really squeeze them. And now this guy that they have hung so much of their reputation and who has been so much of really the, you know, he is the Cyclops to the CBC's X-Men. All of a sudden, he turns out to be this creep. And it creates, not only is there a scandal up here now about you know, whether Gimeshi was abusive to women or not. But there's a further scandal to this, is that, you know, how much did the CBC know? When did they know it? You know, did they move quick enough to get rid of him? Did they try to cover it up? How does this play into all the forces within our government that are trying to undercut the CBC's funding and all this stuff? So this is just, there's a huge Canadian cultural component to all this kind of stuff. I don't get too far into it because I'm not really the best read on it. I want to say, like, if any of our listeners actually want to really get into this and really find out kind of what's going on, there's a podcast out there by a guy named Jesse Brown called Canada Land. Jesse is one of the guys that broke this story in the first place. He's a journalist in Canada that's written for a whole bunch of Canadian news publications. He's actually done stuff for the CBC before, but he's reported for a big magazine we have up here that comes out, I don't know if it's bi-weekly or monthly or whatever, called Maclean's, for Toronto Life, for a bunch of publications like that. Jesse has started doing this independent podcast called Canada Land, where he really attacks things that would get talked about behind the scenes at news organizations, but where those news organizations would never dare tread. And, you know, the kind of stuff that percolates, you know, amongst reporters, but for one reason or another, doesn't end up, you know, on the front sheet of a paper. So he was working on investigating the Gimeshi allegations for months up until now. And he was one of the people that really helped break this story. So he has a couple, he has a really good interview that went up on, if you want to go look it up, the episode would be episode 56 of Canada Land. It's called What We Knew About Xi'an. He interviews someone that used to work on Q. But anyways, you should definitely go check out his stuff because he has some really thoughtful, interesting, you know, looks at what's going on there. So anyways, I mean, that's my really short attack on the whole Xi'an thing. It's a big story on a number of levels. And of course, there's the whole salacious thing about it being a sex scandal, but as far as the media in my country goes, it cuts way deeper than just, you know, embarrassing sex scandal. It has big ramifications for the media. I mean, even more so just because this was a person that everyone had rallied around. Like, he was on everyone's side. So if you were going to, you know, if you were, say, the Arcade Fire and you had the, you know, get the news out about, you know, your big album that's coming out or something like that, like, he is the springboard that you would be using to do that. So, I mean, my earlier John Peel comparison isn't, you know, it's not necessarily accurate in that he was promoting stuff that was super obscure or anything like that. But as far as him being, you know, the arts statesman for our state broadcaster, he kind of fit that role. So that's a bunch of stuff. I don't really know where else to go with this. I mean, Adam, you don't need to jump in and go, yeah, because...
Yeah, bro.
because it's well, it is one of these things. I don't know.
I mean, Adam, do you have something to say? Or?
No, I mean, that was about the best lesson in what was going on I've gotten.
All right, well, here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to take the sex scandal approach because I'm American. You guys read Dan Savage. Dan Savage, he writes for AV Club. And basically, he gives out sex advice. And some of it is pretty straightforward. Some of it is pretty freaky stuff that I don't agree with. Some of it I do agree with. The reason I bring this up is because I think Dan Savage is of the opinion, and I could be wrong, that as long as something's consensual and legal, it's okay. I don't agree with that. I mean, I don't know why any guy would ever want to hit a woman, choke a woman, smack a woman, especially, I mean, I don't know why you would want to, especially when you're trying to, like, have sex with her or something. And so I'm just going to say, no guy should ever hit a woman, ever, even if, I mean, if it's consensual, then you really need to get yourself checked out mentally, because you should never want a guy to hit you, to choke you, to slap you. That's not cool. I mean, it really isn't. I think it's unhealthy. That's just my opinion. So, if you're in a relationship where a guy's hitting you, slapping you, or something like that, then my advice is get out of the relationship, even if it's, quote, consensual, because I think it's unhealthy. And any guy that would want to hit a woman like that is an unhealthy guy. That's just my opinion, so...
One of the things that's really come up in or really has come out of the woodwork amongst a lot of the people that are in the Toronto art scene is that apparently it's been a real kind of a hushed tones thing for a long time, that when Gian would show up to say a fashion show or a movie gala or any of these kind of things that cultural bigwigs would go to, everyone, I guess, well, they're professing now that they all knew he was kind of a creep.
Oh, everybody knew.
Well, I mean, they didn't know he was necessarily hitting women or anything, but they knew he was. I hate to use the term. He was a player, right?
Yeah.
And there were people that definitely I wouldn't let my sister go out with Gian Gomeshi, right? Like, there was that sort of thing, amongst the literati or whatever that would that he would be in those same circles with, or at least they're all saying that now. You get a lot of people that come out and be like, "See, I knew that guy was something was up," but that's what's happening here. Well. Let me stay on the Toronto topic here for just a couple points. We're going to get off the Gian, and we're going to get to some stuff that's actually good about the Big Smoke here. Well, three things. One.
The Big Smoke. Toronto is called the Big Smoke?
Toronto is called the Big Smoke.
Why is it called the Big Smoke? Like factories or something?
I don't know the actual reason of that. The rest of Canada has all kinds of probably derogatory reasons why that they're called the Big Smoke, but that's what they're called.
I'm from the Big Smoke, baby.
But anyway, so we'll do three good things about Toronto to follow up that story. Good thing number one, they did not reelect Rob Ford or his brother Doug Ford. So hey, that's nice. So number two, our friend. Friend of the podcast, one-time guest host here on the podcast, from Everything and the Kitchen Sink, which we've referred you guys to before. Anyways, Katie asked me if I could go plug a show for her that's coming up here in Toronto. So the show is a benefit. It's going on Friday, November 28th. At the Sneaky D's Club, and it is going to be raising money for the Toronto Food Bank. It is the Monster Voodoo Machine 20th anniversary show of their debut LP, Suffer System, and it features a really old-school Canadian punk band. The Almighty Trigger Happy is playing it, along with Harangue and Valier. So anyways, you can go look this up on... I don't know. Go to Facebook. There's a Facebook event for it. But if you're in Toronto, you should go to the show because it raises money and it's for a good cause. So that's thing number two about Toronto. Number three is a song. So one of my favorite, and you know what? I just realized that I called Nikki from Everything in the Kitchen Sink Katie. Sorry, Nikki. That. Anyways, number three, I've really loved everything that I've heard this year that's come out of Buzz Records. And I've played a bunch of Buzz Records songs on this show in the past few months, I guess. So we played stuff by the Beverleys, which were really cool, fuzzed out, super super grungy three-piece band out of Toronto. We played a band on last week's show, I think, called Mexican Slang. That was a cool punk band from up there. We've, of course, played Grays, and Grays blew up. And I believe we played something from a band called Weaves earlier, which were a band I saw at the Albarita Music Festival. That was really cool. So anyways, I'm going to play one more Buzz Records band. This one, if you're into the Toronto music scene, should be super obvious because they had a huge record that came out this year that everyone really loves. The band is called Adonis Adonis. So this band released a record earlier in the year on Buzz. It is called Hard Boiled, Soft Boiled. And it is a two-part LP. Well, in that there are two sides on it. But each side has its own kind of thing going. So the Hard Boiled side of the Adonis Adonis record, it is industrial. It is punk. It's kind of loud and angry. It has these shades of Joy Division and New Order that play into it. It's really cool. The second side, the soft-boiled side, gets all shoegazy and mellow and spaced out. So taken together, it is a really neat listen because it starts off really aggressive and then it gets cool and chill and, you know, stretches out. And I'm using, like, really horribly sounding words to describe this. But I really like this record. It's really good. It's really neat. So we're going to play a song from the hard-boiled side of the record. This song is called Are We Friends from the Toronto three-piece Adonis Adonis from Buzz Records and their record Hard-Boiled, Soft-Boiled. So here we go. I guess we should talk about Paint It Black, shouldn't we?
Paint It Black.
All right. So the Philly hardcore institution Paint It Black, they were engaged in some high-level punk rock philosophy regarding their recently canceled show. So originally, the band was scheduled to play a show at the University of Delaware on November 6th. However, according to an email from the school's ticketing system, Paint It Black pulled out of the show on September 11th. Now, today, Paint to Black issued a statement explaining their refusal to play the show. They also announced a replacement show. According to the band, when they signed to play the show, they were under the belief that all of the details about how the show was going to be conducted had all been set in stone. However, sometime after the show was arranged and tickets were purchased, the band says that they were then informed that there would be barricades at the show, which, if you are a Painted Black fan, you know that just doesn't work at all, because you're just supposed to get in a big fucking pile and yell, because at least that's my experience seeing Painted Black play. At Fest, actually. Everyone just got in a pile. You can't do that if there's barricades. So the band have informed the venue that they will not play the show due to the barricades. So instead, what they did, and this is the show is passed now, but on October 30th, the band played a free public show in a non-traditional venue, and they stated that...
It was actually at a park, actually under a bridge near a park in Philadelphia.
Oh, I've seen pictures from that then. Okay, cool. Anyways, yeah. So, so they announced more details on the kind of when and where of that after we posted the article, because they didn't want to create, like, a mad rush of people.
Well, technically it was an illegal show. Like, they didn't have permits or anything.
Yeah, so long story short, Painted Black wanted to play this show. Then it was revealed to them, I guess, that there would have been barricades at the show, which does not jive with a Painted Black performance. So they pulled out of that sucker and did their own crazy Under a Bridge show. This is out in your neck of the woods, right?
It is, actually. The secret show they played a Ink and Dagger cover that was probably 25 minutes from my house.
This is the bridge that you go under to cry sometimes.
It's the bridge I go under to cry, where I go under to sell meth to kids, where I go under to eat sheep that are crossing over the bridge. It's a multi-purpose bridge.
Hmm.
It's the bridge where I ask Fred Wesley if I – no, I'm sorry, Donald Byrd, if I can take it to the bridge. And he says, take it to the bridge. So I take it to the bridge.
Is it the bridge where you go to play poo sticks?
Poo sticks?
You don't know about poo sticks?
Oh, those are things that – oh, yeah. You juggle sticks or whatever. It's like a hippie thing sort of?
No, it's from Winnie the Pooh, where it was this game where you go to one side of the bridge and throw the stick in the water and then it goes under the bridge.
That sounds unwholesome, Adam.
I'm just saying. It's a kid's thing. Not everything is about drugs and hippies. Anyways, So yeah, okay. So yeah, so this is in your neck of the woods. So what's your thoughts here? Like,
I like Painted Black. I clash with them a lot on ideologies, and I'm clashing with them here. Artistically, I think Painted Black is one of the best modern hardcore punk rock bands. I respect. I kind of respect how they stick to their ethics, if you will. Although I think they're a little flexible with their ethics sometimes. But my point is this: is where's the line between adhering to your punk rock ethics and rock and roll star excessdom or whatever, excess overlap. And to me, this seems to be, you know, rock and roll star, rock star excess. It's like, we don't go on unless there's no brown M&Ms in our bowl backstage. It's like, listen, all these kids were excited for the show. They're in Delaware. A lot of them are college students, so they don't have a car. They were looking forward to the show. Painted Black's never played a show there. There's a barricade. Yeah, well, it kind of sucks. But is it really going to make the show that much worse? No. It almost seems like an empty gesture to me, in that it's almost like, look how punk we are. We don't even have to play if there's a barricade. I mean, would the barricade change a single person's view of the band or the band's ideology or what they're expressing? Absolutely not. It'd be different if they were playing a venue where, like, you know, it was like, I don't know, a church that hated gay people. Like, and then they said, well, we're not going to play a church that plays gay. I would understand that. But a barricade? Come on. I mean, you know, Joey Keithley of the Oasis always get to the gig, and Painted Black didn't. They just canceled because one minor detail that they are saying is a big detail – which isn't. It just is not a big – a barricade is not a big detail. You know, kids will hop over it. You know, kids will climb up on stage. Or you can do what Leftover Crack did in San Francisco at Bottom of the Hill. Just destroy the barricade on stage. That's punk rock, you know. I think I respect Painted Black, but I thought this was rock and roll excess. I thought this was kind of empty posturing.
I kind of feel both ways about it. I mean, yes, it wouldn't be the first time they played behind a barricade. They say it themselves in their statement. They have done it before. And I feel like at this point, you know, kids bought tickets to the show. People are planning to go, you know, pulling out over that's like a little much. So make the exception this one time and, you know, don't get so far in the process without it becoming an issue the way it did after the fact. But I will say, like, last year at Fest, they played at a venue that had a barricade, had always had a barricade, and before they came on, like, a bunch of bouncer-type dudes came, and they took down the barricade, and so there was no barricade when they played, and then right after their set ended, they came and they put the barricade right back up.
And you know, I just thought of this. Is what they could have done is they could have went on stage and say, listen, there's a barricade. We don't want a barricade, but it's either there's a barricade or we don't play the show. So playing the show to you kids is more important to us than not having a barricade. I think that would have been the respectable thing to do, you know. But, you know, that's their opinion, their ideology, if you will, you know. Adam White, where do you stand on the great barricade debate of 2014?
Hmm. I am sympathetic to your posturing.
To my posturing.
Argument.
Oh, to
well,
my,
not
okay,
to your yes. Well, well, I'm not sympathetic
John,
to your
posturing. John, you're a poser. You're always
I'm,
posturing.
I'm sympathetic to your argument that there could be some posturing involved here. Or at the very least, you know, the band took the op. I like that they stuck to their principles, but, you know, it feels like that they're... The response to this was maybe unreasonably showy.
Mm.
Like you know, it's one thing to pull out of the show because of that and to put on a different show somewhere else and just, and you know, not make a giant deal about it. But this feels like it was maybe a little bit more spectacle than it was required. I mean, it was barricades, which, yes, while sucks, isn't necessarily like a human rights issue or anything like that, you know?
I mean, how much can barricades possibly influence people's enjoyment of a show? 5% maybe, you know? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, like again, Painted Black has like hugely audience participatory shows. That was a horribly phrased sentence, and I apologize
to
the world.
The kids just climb over the barricade.
Yeah, but if that's going to then cause, you know, some meathead bouncer to start kicking the shit out of your fans, you don't want that either.
But they didn't express that, you know? I don't know.
Hmm.
Well, anyways, I mean, this is really a small issue, so, you know, I still certainly respect Painted Black, and I will continue to see them in the future. I just disagree with them on this one point.
So we're going to settle on, this is a thing that happened.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, pretty much.
Speaking of a spectacle, Roxy Music have broken up. And you say, Sean, who's Roxy Music? No problem if you don't know who Roxy Music is. Roxy Music is an incredibly influential, incredibly great band. They formed in 1971. They were, I mean, honestly, when they first started, they were considered a glam rock band, but they're really probably more like art rock. Their first two albums have Brian Eno on them. A lot of you might know Brian Eno, very famous, very avant-garde producer. He worked with David Bowie. He worked with Devo. He worked with U2. He worked with... Roxy Music, I'm missing one of the important ones that he worked with. He did an album with Daryl Hall of Hall & Oates, which actually is a really, really good album. Well, they've broken up. They've actually endured decades of inactivity, but they've never officially broken up. Guitarist Phil Manzara said, I don't think we're going to do any more shows. I think our job is done. When we stopped touring in 2011, Andy McKay and I looked at each other and said, our job is done here. Meanwhile, Brian Ferry, the main Roxy Music guy, is still touring, and the other guys are probably going to tour too. Another whole lot to talk about here. If you don't know Roxy Music, you should check them out. They were super influential on Jello Biafra, super influential on Sex Pistols, Adam Ant, Susie Sue, Amoebix, and Melvins. All those bands are huge Roxy Music fans. Check out the first two albums. The second one is called For Your Pleasure. The first one is called, I think it's just called Roxy Music, actually. The go-to one people say is either Avalon, which is the last one, or Country Life, which is the fourth one. Avalon is a much more mature, adult, contemporary sort of sounding record. Don't start there, even though Pitchfork tells you to. Start with the first two albums, or Country Life, if you can find it. Great band. Check them out.
Cool. I don't really have anywhere to go with that. Just
Well, speaking of reissues, Public Enemy is also reissuing two of their classic albums, probably their most two critically lauded and most famous albums. The reissuing It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, and also 1990's Fear of a Black Planet. What's pretty sweet about these is both reissues are coming with a second disc, including what looks like all the rare B-sides that the band put out with their 12-inch records. And let me tell you, Public Enemy, like some bands just put out, you know, it's a B-side, another song. Some bands make let me explain who Public Enemy is. Public Enemy is an extremely, extremely important hip-hop group. They're you could argue that they're one of the first purely political hip-hop groups. There was hip-hop groups before them that sort of dealt with politics, but Public Enemy was, we are a political group. But not only that, their music is so great, especially, well, actually, both Takes a Nation of Millions and Fear of a Black Planet. Those two albums were produced by the Bomb Squad, just complete booming music. They started 10 to Take 10, two of the greatest hip-hop albums of all time. What's cool about Public Enemy is they really make a big to-do out of their B-sides. Like, their B-sides aren't just another song. Their B-sides are kind of pieces unto themselves, which is supposed to enjoy, sort of like a crass single or something like that. They, you know, sometimes on some of them they really bump up the bass and like put all these wacky ass scratches in or do really weird tracks or stuff. If you're gonna, I mean, Public Enemy B sides are as good as their albums, but you have to enjoy each B side by itself. I guess the one issue here is all the B sides in the second disc are all put together, and so Nation of Millions has 14 B sides. And Fear of Black Planet has 18 B-sides. That's a lot of, like, extreme hip-hop. Because those are not, like, regular hip-hop tracks. They're totally twisted and mutilated and, like, banging tracks. But that's a lot to take in. But at any rate, you should, if you don't know Public Enemy, here's where you start. Take a Nation of Million Holds Back, Fear of Black Planet. These are great albums. You should check this group out.
I don't know where else we go with that. I've always thought that those two records have the coolest titles of anything.
They really do. And the covers are cool, too, especially Takes a Nation of Millions.
So, yeah, you know.
Do the kids still know who Flavor Flav is? Because remember, like, 5 years ago, like, Flavor Flav was huge because he was on Real Life and he was on Flavor of Love and he was on, like, Hoops Gets Married or whatever. And
I don't know what any of those are.
You don't know Flavor? Adam, you know Flavor.
I know who Flavor Flav is. I don't know what any of those shows are.
Flavor Flav had had sort of a second run in the early 2000s as like a reality TV star.
He had like three dating shows though, because there was Real Life or whatever. Is that the show Real Life? Is that the show?
I've never actually seen a single episode of it.
I saw them all. I actually watched them all. Because I felt it was my duty as a Public Enemy fan to watch all Flavor Flav shows.
It was your duty to watch a shitty reality show.
No, not only did I watch I watched five shitty reality shows. I watched Real Life or whatever that show was. It's like celebrities hanging out in the house. Then I watched Flavor Loves Brigitte or whatever that was called. Like Flavor Flav essentially like was going out with Brigitte Nielsen. Although it was all a big setup. Then there was three Flavor of Love shows where basically like a bunch of girls like competed to be his new girlfriend, but then they didn't go out at the end anyways. So
this is why your country is falling behind in the STEM fields.
I don't know what a STEM field is.
See, exactly. You don't know what that is. You know all the Flavor Flav reality dating shows.
You're absolutely right about
Adam,
that.
Adam, what's a STEM field?
Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Listen, I don't care about technology and engineering. I care about Flavor Flav, Public Enemy, and it's taking a Nation of Millions to hold us back. And let's keep on moving with a band that will bring us back into the STEM field age, that will increase our aptitude among, you know, engineering, technology. Downtown Boys, they've signed to Don Giovanni Records. My very favorite brand new punk rock band, Bad Canoes, without a question. I love Bad Canoes. Second favorite, Friends of Bad Canoes, Downtown Boys. If Bad Canoes are the modern Slits, Downtown Boys are the modern X-Ray Specs. I love this band.
I also really, really enjoy this band. Their 7-inch was good.
Did you review it?
I don't think I've reviewed it. Maybe I should.
Downtown Boys is they're one of these bands where the lead singer is actually a girl, so like the name's kind of a joke, I guess. And so like the guys play like super energetic, kind of like, I don't know, kind of classic. I guess you could even say Baltimore style, even though they're from Rhode Island, Baltimore style hardcore, kind of like Cloak Dagger, that kind of stuff. And then the lead singer, she just screams, kind of like polystyrene. She just goes off hook. Plus, they've got a saxophonist. So this group is cool. If you want some awesome new punk rock, check out Downtown Boys. And moving on, we're going to wrap up.
Sorry, that was my fault. I was just kind of like awkward silence that. Here, let me grab this one here. So the charges against a man jailed for posting Exodus lyrics have been dropped. So if you're going to recall, earlier this year, a man was jailed for posting Exodus lyrics on his Facebook page. John, this was an adorable article because you wrote Facebook as two words.
Oh, I did? Oh,
yeah. Like an old man. like on his Facebook, whatever that is. Anyways,
You're right, on his Facebook. I'm falling behind on the STEM field. That you think I can worry about Facebook?
I know. Jeez. Okay, you've like genericized their name. It's like Kleenex. Good. Now they're going to lose the copyright to it.
This is my punk rock opposition to Facebook. I'm trying to cost them their trademark. Take that, Facebook. I know you're stealing my identity, my info, but I'm getting back to you. I'm stealing your trademark. I'm making you generic. It happened to Xerox. It happened to Kleenex, your next Facebook. Or should I say Facebook? Yeah.
Anyways, so James Evans posted lyrics from the Exodus song Class Dismissed on his Facebook page and was jailed by Kentucky police for making terroristic threats, which we described in like a lot of legal detail on an earlier podcast, if anyone wants to check that out. Anyways, so he spent more than a week in jail before being released without having the charges dropped. Well, recently the charges were dropped. He was represented by the ACLU. Evans, through an ACLU attorney, stated that... Sorry, the attorney stated that Evans is relieved that these very serious criminal charges have been dismissed, and he is grateful for all the support he has received during this difficult time. A conviction on first-degree terroristic threatening could have landed Evans in jail for up to 10 years. The police and the DA's office have not issued a statement on this. We just know this guy's out of hot water now. John.
I'm glad. We talked about this on an earlier podcast. Adam White said, well, does the speaker bear some responsibility for what he's saying on Facebook? Because as we all know, you can't go into a movie theater and say, fire. You can't go into a movie theater and say, I've got a bomb on me. But is posting Exodus lyrics on Facebook the same as that? I say clearly it is not. I was very worried that this is another sign of the curtailment of freedom of speech, curtailment of liberties, curtailment of expression. But because this got dropped, particularly in Kentucky, my faith in America's First Amendment is once again strengthened. And I am proud to be an American because this was dropped. Proud to be an American.
I was going to say, can you start singing?
I was worried for the guy. I do think we're entering an era of increased censorship, and what's even scarier is I think we're entering an era of self-censorship, which I think is horrifying. And by that I mean, you know, people say, like, well, I don't know, do we want to get into a long debate about this, or we want to have another podcast?
I feel like we've touched on this.
Yeah, okay, so I'm just saying is, I feel we're in an era of self-censorship that scares me. I'm glad this got dropped. I'm very pro freedom of speech. I hold the concept of freedom of speech almost to an absolute degree. Not to an absolute degree, but two steps away from it. And I'm glad this got dropped. And I think that just goes to show the importance and the power of the Constitution. A document that I fundamentally believe in.
Someone called you out on that one time, eh?
They did? What do you mean?
It was like, why is John explaining why the Constitution is important? Oh, yeah. Does he think we're babies?
Yeah. Well, somebody sent me hate mail saying, John, why are you explaining what the Constitution is? We all know what the Constitution is. Well, America is way behind on the STEM rankings, so I can't assume people know what the Constitution is. So I got to explain to people the Constitution, where it comes from, and how it functions. So that's the purpose. And I love the Constitution. If you haven't read the Constitution, you should read it if you're American. If you're not, you don't really need to bother because it doesn't apply to you, generally speaking. Although, actually, in some instances, it does.
But it's a decent read regardless.
It is a decent read. And I love old-timey script. We the people. That's not the
And Choose Your Own Adventure books are always fun.
Choose Your Own Adventure Constitution?
Yeah.
Bootlegging, yes or no? I mean,
you've fallen down a well. All right, so what else do we got? News... things happened. Ah, okay, here we go. Last one. So Antarctica, I don't even know how to pronounce this shit. What
some
is it?
Some band
that features Mr. Chris Farron, friend of the podcast from Fake Problems, and Mr. Jeff Rosenstock, who I don't really know is a friend of the podcast or not, but we love him anyways, from Bob the Music Industry, are streaming their new EP titled I'm So Tethered. It's over at the AV Club. You can go check it out there. It's going to have a physical release through Asian Man Records soon. The band, which I'm going to say is called Antartigo Vespucci, has released an EP, another EP called Soulmate Stuff earlier in the year. So this new one, of course, is called I'm So Tethered. You can go check it out. They're touring with Hard Girls, and they recently played Fest. Did you see them at Fest?
No, I did not.
And somebody, you did go to Fest, right?
Yeah, well, I was there. Yes.
Oh, but this was actually Descendants, actually, I think. So no one can fault you for that.
Yeah, there were like three other bands I wanted to see playing at the same time as the Descendants. So it's
Did you go see Chicks Dig It?
No, they played at the same time as Nightbirds.
Yeah, I know. That was a horrible.
Yeah, I saw Nightbirds, who were wonderful.
Nightbirds are wonderful. I can't blame you for that. That's horrible scheduling. Horrible. That's just tragic.
That is a tough one.
Yeah, I would go with Nightbirds, too, because Nightbirds are on the rise, and Chicks Dig It are a great band, but they're, like, holding steady. You know what I mean? Is that fair?
I'd just rather see Nightbirds.
I'd rather them both play a show, because they would perfectly complement each other, and putting them against each other is a cruel, cruel thing.
It is.
That Mr. Tony did. I got to plug something before we wrap up here. And this is a little thing that I like to call the Republican Party of the... No, I don't really know anything about what goes on in your country.
Here's why you should join the Tea Party.
Here's why you should... No, okay, so, Burley Calling. We are proud first-time sponsors of the Burley Calling Festival that is going on up in Burlington, Ontario, Canada, in early December. This is, for all you Americans, like, I don't know, you want to say like a 40-50 minute drive up from the border. Anyways, you should go to it. It's cool. There's a bunch of bands playing over the weekend of December 4th to 8th, 2014. The shows feature a big swath of bands from new upcoming groups to some super veteran Canadian punk acts. Just looking at their schedule here for you, which is pretty extensive. You know, there's definitely shows that... Well, there's lots of shows you should check out, but I mean, there's ones here that I want to make mention of. There's the Generations of Punk Showcase on the Friday night that features, you know, some cool upcoming bands, like bands we played here on the podcast before, like TV Freaks playing the same show as Grade, who is this you know, reunited post-hardcore, you know, emo era, whatever you want to call it, band that everyone was really into, being headlined by Teenage Head, who is a 77 era Canadian punk band who we've also played in the podcast before, hey, but you know, one of the biggest 77 era Canadian punk bands of the time. So they're all playing a show together. You know, you jump on to the next night, we have a killer show where we've got bands like Junior Battles and the Dirty Nil. You have Dead Tired, who's the new band from George from Alexis on Fire, being playing a show headlined by Fucked Up. So anyway, so there's a whole bunch of really cool stuff. On the Sunday night, you have you know, some up and coming little Canadian punk bands like the Penske File, who are really cool, headlining a reunion show from the Full Blast that I know a few of our punk news people are really, really super stoked and jealous about that they can't go to. So anyways, there's lots of stuff going here. There's like a million bands on their list. Go to burleycalling.com and you can find out all the info about this sucker, and we're happy to be on board.
That sounds exciting, man. Dirty Nil, Effed Up, that's a cool lineup.
That is the show that I'm kind of most excited about getting out to. I missed the last few Nil shows, so I need my fix. I need to see the Dirty Nil live every 4 to 5 months, or I get itchy.
Isn't it really fun to do that with a band though, and like see them grow? Like, that's so much fun when you see a band like every 3 or 4 months, and they're a little different every time you see them.
I know, and as I really kind of got into my local scene here and I started to realize the bands that were playing around here a lot, you could totally see that happen. I mean, well, shit, like Pup was one of those bands for us down here, where back when they were Topanga, they were always playing shows down here. And then, like, holy fuck, now they're big. So anyways, yeah, you know, I need to see Dirty Nil every once in a while. I've never seen Dead Tired. I really want to see Dead Tired. So that'd be cool. So all this stuff is going on. Burleycalling.com. We're going to have a little banner on it on Punk News probably by the time you guys hear this podcast. So you can click on that and that'll get you over there. So anyways, that's a plug.
That's cool. Let's play a track. This is a submission. I don't know a whole lot about this band, but the description sounded cool, so I said, yeah, let's play a track. This band is called Chilled Monkey Brains, and they've got an album out called Apocalypse. And the reason I found this band was interesting, because here's what Chris of the band said. We've been compared to bands like Streetlight Manifesto and Five Iron Frenzy, as well as Iron Maiden and Municipal Waste. So I'm digging that contrast. And what's interesting is the album apparently has guest keys by George Clinton's keyboard player, not Bernie Worrell, though, his newer one, Danny Bedrosian. So it's kind of cool that he's got a George Clinton guy like playing on this new album. This track is called, the album's called Apocalypse. You can check the band out at chilledmonkeybrains.bandcamp.com. And this track is called The Tale of Ramirez De Pietro. And I gotta say, I love the wacky, weird punk rock bands. Let's check this out.
We'll be right back.
So that band, you know, was of course named after a Temple of Doom reference. So I want to talk about Temple of Doom here on the show as we close here. I forget the name of the bad guy in Temple of Doom, mainly because, you know, he wasn't a Nazi, so who cares? But whatever his name was.
You mean Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom?
Yeah, Kali? Yeah. You mean Kali?
Yeah, was that what his name was? And I don't know, the bald guy that was ripping out hearts.
Yeah.
When I was Kali. In university. So when I was in university, me and my roommate
Mola Ram, that's it. Mola Ram.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, okay. We really got into the habit of, you know, let's say someone was, you know, standing in the living room for whatever reason, someone else would walk around the corner. You'd meet each other's gaze, and then someone would just in a deep voice growl like Kali Ma, and just try to like plunge your hand into the other guy's chest to see if you could pull their beating heart out. And it never worked, but we tried all the time.
You know, if there's one thing I know, it's young ladies love it when guys make movie references to Star Wars and Indiana Jones.
Yeah, yeah. The girl that lived with us just thought we were super smart, intelligent, handsome people, I'm sure.
Fair enough. I think there's no way better to wrap up a podcast than that. Adam E., thanks for being on the podcast. Thanks for telling us about all your wild and wacky Fest adventures. I'm glad you made it back in one piece.
Yeah, I survived another year. It was not wild or wacky, but...
Was it enjoyable?
Yes.
Was it soothing?
Yes, it was.
Was it refreshing?
It was highly refreshing.
Well, fair enough. Adam E., he's refreshed and ready to continue at Punk Me. We love him very much. And also, Adam White, I'm glad you survived Rob White not getting elected. And also, I'm glad that your STEM lineup or whatever it's called is doing so well. I'm proud of Canada for having such a great STEM segment or whatever it's called.
I don't even know how to... There was so much wrong there. Just we'll come back later. Well, bye. Bye, everyone.